Welcome to the Sonic Truth. I'm Chris. Justin and Trevor are not here today. Trevor's up in Jacksonville. He, on accident, took the extra camera. So it's just me. And we have our good friend, Brian Tarquin, here today. How you doing, Brian?
Good, buddy. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you. I know we've been trying to do this a while, so I'm glad we finally make it happen.
I know, it's great. Yeah. I was really looking forward to it.
So this isn't too far for you. You're in person. How far away are you?
I'm in Cocoa Beach.
Oh, that's not bad.
So about an hour.
Cool. I don't think I've been by the new spot where you're at now.
You were in the old spot where Merritt Island. Yeah.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, Brian and myself, we've known each other a while. It's been about how many years?
Long time.
Yeah.
You guys were hand making it in your apartment, I think.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It was basically, it was apartment, townhouse, whatever. It was really small. And I used to come by. Brian was one of our earliest supporters, actually.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
early adopter.
It was great. Yeah. Loved it.
Yeah. And yeah. I think we were making bus comps first, so.
Yeah, I think it was the SSL.
Yeah, and the Opto. You got the Opto.
Yeah, the Opto.
How many pieces do you have now?
I forget now. I think I got just about everything.
Just about everything.
Just about it, except the new stuff.
So obviously we know each other well. Brian, can you introduce yourself just a little bit for those who may not know you so well?
Sure. Well, I've been in the industry for about 30 some years, and I work with a lot of famous guitarists like Joe Satriani and Larry Coryell and Mike Stern, all these guys. A lot of great guitarists, and a lot of my heroes like Steve Morse, Billy Sheehan, and I do a lot of the Guitar Master series. I was for those of you who remember, probably back in the 90s, I was a jazz artist. I had a lot of contemporary jazz hits back in those days. So it was actually called smooth jazz in those days. So now,
I remember those days.
Yeah, yeah. And so now I'm actually also a composer and been very fortunate. I've won a few Emmys, and I worked with Joe Satriani last year. We won a Best Video Award, and so it's. And I'm actually doing another project with him coming up this year. And so, I just love his equipment. I love his gear. Chris has really nailed it to the vintage vibe and the tone and the sound. So I have a recording studio myself. I'm an analog digital guy. I have a Trident 24 desk from the 80s that I've completely rebuilt and re-resurrected. And I have tape machines, 2-inch tape machines, Atari MTR-90s and all that stuff. Good Ampex 440Cs. And, I love all that stuff. And one of the reasons I love this stuff is because I can put everything into my racks and still work in the digital realm, but be able to use the outboard gear through the desk. And so, it's an exciting company.
And one thing that's really cool, when I went to your place, is it's a mobile recording.
Yes.
I
had so many studios, but I wound up moving so much with the family back in the day. I said, I got to put this into a mobile, because one of my ideal ones was the Rolling Stones mobile. And I thought, oh man, it's just, I've got to do something like that. Also, Guy Charbonneau, he's got the Le Mobile recording studio in LA, and he does a lot of the big shows and everything. Worked with Jimmy Page and Journey, all these guys, huge recordings. So what I wound up doing was I got this 26-foot trailer from Southern California that they had already extended the ceilings inside to 10 feet. So, and it was already basically structurally set up to be two rooms, a live room and a control room. So that's kind of, from that point, I got it pretty much as an empty shell. I redid everything and kind of just...
It threw me for a loop at first, because I don't think you told me when I went down that it was a I was like, wow, this is really cool, actually.
Yeah, it's really cool. I have a breakout box in the front, so if I want to record drums or somewhere or, anything. So it's actually great, because no matter where I move it, it sounds the same.
Yeah.
I don't have to refigure the room out with, you know, with everything.
Yeah, I was just blown away. I think it's, we should get some pictures and just show those.
Like, yeah, I will. I'll send you some pictures.
That would be amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. And I think it's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, you did what they called smooth jazz back then. And now you're doing something a little bit different, obviously. And you've done a lot of different things, you know, with the some of the books you've released as well. Yeah. And, you know, you're just not a one-trick pony, you know, in that sense. You definitely sort of, you could do a lot of things really well, which is really cool.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you know, once I started in the industry, you know, you get to know each section of it. And then you're kind of like, well, you know, this is kind of cool. And, you know, you kind of go that avenue. I think also to be a music composer and you know, I think also an artist, you have to be flexible with styles. And you have to be flexible of like what, you know, you don't want to be locked into one thing, you know, or you kind of like, I like to kind of go all over genres just because I think it's healthier as an artist, also as a listener too, you know.
Yeah, it's good to switch it up too.
Yeah.
Yeah, because otherwise, you know, if you just keep doing the same thing, it's just like us, if we just made the same product over and over
right,
again.
Right, exactly.
It would just get stale.
Yeah, the same mic pre and the same compressor. And that's what, you know, some companies do that. And I guess that's what they do. But to me, it gets boring. I think for you, and I think it gets boring for the customers and for the listeners and everything.
We got the same thing. We're offering, you know.
Right,
like,
right.
You know, and don't get me wrong, that same thing, if it's like an LA-2A, that's a pretty rad thing, but
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. It's like with bands too, yeah. You know, it's like if you're AC/DC, you got to do what AC/DC does. You can't come out and do a jazz record. You can't come, you know, and do it because that's
your core. Yeah, they can go off on their own maybe and do a solo thing and get their kicks doing that for sure. And one thing I think that's really cool is you were talking about the video, right? You won an award for that video last year with Joe Satriani.
Yeah.
You sent me that video. I was like, that's one of the coolest music videos I've ever seen.
Oh,
like,
thanks. Yeah. It was cool. I got a guy in Italy to do this. He was like, you know, like Europe is kind of like a little bit ahead of the trend for this AI kind of thing. And so I had him do it and I wasn't sure what to expect with AI because there's so much kind of like controversy with this. But I thought he did a really great job. I thought it matched the music, it matched everything. I'm actually doing a new one for the Jean-Luc Ponty song, Beyond the Warrior's Eyes, using the same director.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought, the direction, was amazing.
Yeah.
And this is, I'll do my plug here for your album, you know, because, you have Beyond the Warrior's Eyes, and who's on this album?
Oh, boy, you got Jean-Luc Ponty, Eric Johnson, Robin Ford. We have so many
Hal's
people.
On it. Yeah. I see Hal's on it.
Yeah. Hal Lindes from Dire Straits, Steve Morris from Deep Purple, and Jeff, actually, Jeff Kindler, who is the violinist for Jan Hammer and Jeff Beck.
Nice.
So it was great. And Carl Verheyen, who's in Supertramp.
Jeez. Crazy lineup. Every time you do something, I feel like there's always just this crazy lineup.
Yeah, I'm trying to always outdo myself, I guess. You know,
on the next one. Sounds familiar. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You get stuck in that thing and you're like, well, what can I do to kind of up the game for the next one?
Yeah. So I know you, we talked about maybe doing, checking out some of the gear as well. And we are actually on a different little set point than we normally are. We're sort of, I feel like our podcast set's just always in flux, right? It's always changing. But today we're actually at our lab. We have our beautiful session desk, trapeze desk here. And our lab, we actually set up this lab for anyone that works here to get used to, or anyone to come in as well, to come get used to any of the Audioscape pieces and hear everything. So later on we'll rip into this, we'll hear some of the pieces you have and check it out, and you know, maybe even get you playing some guitar as well.
Sure.
Which I think would be super cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah. So is there any, so you mentioned you got a new album coming out. Are you in the process of recording, mixing? Where are you at with that?
Yeah, we're doing, I'm doing a new track with Joe Satriani and doing with Stu Hamm, Gus G from Ozzy. And so actually just in the process of creating now. So I'm actually composing them and recording, you know, starting recording them.
So I guess take me through this process a little bit. I'm sure it varies with each artist you work with. Do you have like a lot of back and forth with them, or you compose pretty much everything? And then you just let them go hog wild on it,
I kind of, what I do is I know their style. So I kind of tailor custom compose the song for them. And then I give them a lot of room to move as far as solos and what they want to do and create. I generally will put down all the melodies and the sections and orchestrate it, and then give them a large section to really go ape shit on. That's basically, kind of the way I don't like to direct them at all with that, because obviously they are what they are. And that's why I'm getting them, so that I just have them open up.
That's so cool. Yeah. And there's never been like a time where they've been like, oh, maybe I want to redo that or recut that a lot. Do you get that a lot? Or is it pretty much, I'm sure that the level of talent they're at, they're probably just like, bam, you hear that about a lot of like singers or whatever. They just go in and they just freaking nail it. And it's just like, next,
Yeah, pretty much they're in that category where they'll do it and send it to me and they're fine.
That's awesome.
There may be like, they may want me to edit something in and out or something, but that's rare. Usually it's like, they got the whole thing down.
So you got a lot of Audioscape pieces. Which piece kind of surprised you the most as far as like what you've maybe used it on? Like that, you didn't think this is where I'd be using this, but it really excels here.
Yeah. I have to tell you, there's a couple pieces, but the V comp, I love that on bass, putting on triple. I mean, it is especially rock bass,
Yeah.
And it just saturates the shit out. It's great.
It does. Triple mode gets really it gets a lot of saturation when you between
doubles. But it works.
Yeah.
But
it definitely
works.
Does. Yeah.
Because many people have triple.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody has triple.
I think one of the Recreations, has the triple, but the amount of recovery mode times we have and that's definitely sort of, there's some things with that one we've definitely taken the design and just pushed it past the point of like, have you ever gotten it to glitch out on your
you got to push it pretty hard for that.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, because it's got a lot of headroom, so it's not like, it'll happen right away.
Yeah, triple mode is where, and the fastest, recovery mode, that's where you'll get it to start getting those pumping artifacts. And I think it's probably from building guitar pedals and loving like just weird, obscure effects that are like glitch out and do stuff that made me want to do that. Because from a design perspective, we could have made it so that can't happen,
Made
it a little bit, I guess, classier, but... I like stuff that if it's musical and can be used in a musical way, I like at least having the option there for the end user.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. So, absolutely. And the other piece is your mic pre, the 500.
Oh yeah. You have, we don't really have too many V108s out in the wild.
Oh, really?
Which is interesting. And I think it's one of the best preamps for guitar. And
it's great.
Yeah.
It's great. Because you have so much room to saturate that. And the guitar really loves it too. But I've used it even on subtle like voiceovers too. And it's crisp and clean, and it won't be outrageous, if you back off a bit of it. But it sounds great. And it's got that, you can explain it technically better, but you have, what is the 1176?
So it's the 1176 Rev A line amp output section. So, which is obviously, like what that sounds like, a little bit crisp, a little bit more presence.
Yeah, a lot of presence.
And then so that's about 40 dB right there. That line amp is where that's at. And a lot of people don't realize that these line amps, even before I get into the design too much, they were used a lot in a lot of different things. There's the 1108, there's the 1109, the push-pull 1109, which they use that in the line amp for the Rev F, but it's also, there's four of them in the Cooper Time Cubes as well.
Oh, there are. Yeah.
It's really, really cool. And the so the V108, the concept's really simple. It takes like a JFET input stage, which adds about 25 dB, and then it's got that 1108 line amp. So it's about 65 dB total, and that's how we achieve that. We're actually using some linear FETs in the input section there for the JFET, and those things freaking rule. And yeah, that's how we got to the where we're at with that. So it's this design idea has been done before, but the way we're doing is a little bit unique. The line amp's one to one exactly with the original, but the JFET stage is a little bit unique with the way we're doing it.
The JFET, did you kind of modify the whole section of that preamp?
Yeah. 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 So yeah, it's been goosed to our liking, but yeah, it's one of those things where I think because of that, you know, or people may think, oh, why would I want a preamp kind of based around an 1176? Some people they don't make that connection.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You see that to me is the perfect marriage.
Yeah. For those listening, they can't see me go like this, but you know, that's what I think it's a little crazy because there is so many cool different circuit blocks in every single thing. And I think that's something that I think people maybe think of it as just like some magical device, but there's all these different areas that just make that up. So like with some things like they consider it a compressor, but it's also a saturation tone box.
Well, yeah.
A lot of that saturation and tone are coming from the amplifier stages.
The output, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. That's the whole thing with tube amps.
Yeah.
It's like the output stage has to be pushed in order to get that sound. That's why at low levels, you know, you can't push the output stage because you're at a low level. So it's the preamp working with the output to get like, you know, plexi sound.
And, oh, yep.
Yeah, you know, and the JMP, early JMP stuff. And
yeah, you got to move some air.
You do.
Definitely have to move some air. And you didn't you write a book on the on tube amps as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you have... I think I have that book and there's Encyclopedia of Guitars.
Guitars, yep.
Yep.
As well.
And, yeah. And those are Hollander books too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys should definitely check them out. I'm plugging all your stuff
thanks,
here today.
Man. I appreciate
like,
it.
Like I'm a fan. So, it's a really intriguing read. Also, if you're, you know, I don't feel like if you're layers deep nerd, you're going to be like, you know, turned off by it. But also if you're like just a little bit like into it, you're going to be really into it as well. I think it covers a wide range.
Yeah. You know? I tried to make it not so, book oriented. I kind of made it so it's user friendly, you know, where you had a lot of pictures and you have a simple kind of explanations of the amps. And because some of the amp books you get out and they got diagrams and, you know what I mean? It's like a rocket scientist thing. But,
yeah,
you know, which is cool. But, you know, I wanted to make this kind of user-friendly to just somebody who may like, oh, this is cool. I like amps. But, you know, I'm not really all into that, you know, 100%. But let me just check it out. And it would still be an easy read for them.
Yeah, and that's great. And with someone like myself who is into diagrams and, like, you know, used to modify organ amps and build them into guitar amps, I could still read it and be intrigued and read it the whole way through.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's hard to get a whole audience like that.
You know
what I mean? Because it's like you got to get the whole vast, you know, from stem to stern, like everybody interested. But
yeah. No, that is very true. So.
And you make the pedals still?
You know, we actually did a special custom run of CBC Pedals Companion. And I think when we first met, I may have still been building pedals. Like,
Yeah, you were just ending the pedals and you were just starting to concentrate on all the rack.
CBC pedals, we've talked about it a few times on the podcast, but that's, it was kind of around 2010, 2015. And that range. And I still see them come up for sale. I'm the type of person now, I watch what I used to build and see whenever people are selling them and see how beat up they were. I was like, well, I didn't really, that finish, the way we finished them didn't really stand the test of time. Or, like, sometimes I'm like that. Well, because I would hand sand them, but I wouldn't really like finish them with like a gloss or anything like that, like a modern finish. So, and I would get them silk screened, but you know, if they, you know, a bare enclosure, metal enclosure, if it goes out and does a bunch of gigs and people are stomping on it with sand and that, it's going to get pretty dirty pretty quick. I guess that is for any pedal, but
yeah,
it would really just sink into the cases I've noticed over time, which is one of those things when we did the, when we brought back the CBC pedals, we actually did the whole case completely different than we used to do them back in the like 2010s or whatever.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is it, like a more of a heavy steel?
It's actually, well, since we have Ryan who does all our mechanical designs, we actually modeled it one-to-one with the original case, kind of like Audioscape does with their products.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it looks like the original Companion Fuzz case.
Oh, that's
exactly
cool.
With the same powder and, yeah.
Yeah.
Same front plate and, you know, so, yeah, those things are really cool. We're hoping to maybe do some more of those. It's one of those things where it's just cool to see, you know, like...
Yeah.
See it kind of live on and do something, because we have all these old pedals at CBC Pedals that I had done, and it was just me in that garage, right? That little,
yeah.
And it was terrible video. So I'm, you know, they weren't like recorded into a DAW. They were just like the camera speaker or whatever. But it was like, I was just excited. I had just finished building this thing. I thought it sounded rad. So I was just like, here, you know, just go. But yeah, I still see comments from time to time on these videos. Like,
oh yeah.
And they show up and they're like, you know, what's going on with this company? Is this guy's either dead or in jail or what's going on? So we usually send away from the Audioscape account or do something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny.
Yeah, but they still probably don't even get it. But like, yeah, it's just kind of like one of those under the radar things.
Yeah. So, did you ever resurrect any of the others?
Not yet, but there's another one that we've been trying to work on that we might be close, hopefully soon. The mechanicals are actually holding that up. But obviously I've built the thing hundreds of times before. But yeah, the mechanicals, getting it one-to-one with the original, because this is a case design that's never been redone before in the vintage,
okay.
Like on the circuit. So I guess I probably won't say too much more, you know, break whatever company NDA I have on myself. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, people could guess if they go look at the CBC lineup. And we're kind of going through some of the ones that we had silkscreen, we're kind of going through and doing those first. Would be a good way to look at that.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah, if you look at the old CBC stuff or you see it pop up, then you could probably guess. There's only like four or five we actually had silk screened. So.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. The rest were just raw. They didn't even have like silk or labeling on them
just
at all.
Just a silk.
I had a
box.
Raw series. Yeah. I would just hand sand it, put it together and, you know, figure out what the three controls do, you know?
Oh, that's great.
It's like what I tell the end user basically. So. Yeah, I don't think. Yeah, did you ever try any of those?
No, pedals? I never tried. I was gonna say we should try.
Yeah,
plug into one.
We got a couple of the companions here, so yeah, we should rock that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, did you ever think about making an amp, guitar amp?
You know, I built some for myself, and it just sort of ended there with that. I did make a couple. You remember those little Fender Champion, those little dinky little things they reissued?
Yeah,
and I found like some that were quote unquote broken. From a guitar store or repair shop in Central Florida somewhere. And they weren't broken. They just sounded like shit. But
they thought it was broken.
So I literally took their little circuit board out and just threw it out and just hand wired like F51 champs in there, like Tweed champs.
Oh yeah.
That circuit. And then I like did a run of those selling those. But that was like the extent of like the amp building. I built like Marshalls and Fenders, a lot of Fenders. I've done a couple. I took an old RCA head and converted that to a 5E3 as well and sold that, I remember. A lot of Hammond organ amps, just random, whatever, like things that had like, you know, 212 AX7, 6V6s, you know?
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, those Fender champs, you could have just like turned them into monsters, you know, because, you know, put a couple extra 12 AX7s in it and, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, that's really what Boogie kind of did, you know, they did it on I don't know what it was, a Princeton, I think, or something.
I got this one amp. I don't know if you've heard of it. I don't want to veer off too much, but gosh, what the heck is it called? It's called a Blue Drive. And it was this guy in Nashville was making them, and he went in these just souped up basements is what it was, is what this circuit was. And it's one of the coolest sounding amps I have. And he only like made a few of them or whatever before. I don't know if the guy just went crazy or what, but you know, like they say about CBC pedals, I don't know what happened to this guy. Probably just found something cooler to do for whatever reason or whatnot. But that amp is one of the coolest amps I own.
What is that, a 110?
It's a head. It's like a basement.
Oh, it's just a head.
Yeah, it's a basement head that's been modified. Yeah. I like just weird options you wouldn't think of, like the way the channels chain and all this stuff. Kind of reminded me a little bit of like maybe some of the ethos of Boogie. That's what made me think of that when you mentioned Boogie.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the stuff they did to the Fender circuits.
Did he leave the 6L6s?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool amp. So, yeah, I should bring that by here, actually. I don't even have it at the old shop. You remember the old shop?
Yes. Where we're at? Yeah.
Yeah, so it's still hanging out there. We got it all refurbished after the flood and that. So.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask you about that one.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting there, yeah.
All those outbuildings, they're still...
Yeah, they're still there.
Yeah, still there.
We did get rid of some of the... we had like a big shed we dropped on for like inventory storage that we no longer needed. So like we did get rid of the big shed and some of the... what we used to call... We used to have this shed where we'd put like all the broken pieces... and like all the bad stuff, and we used to just call it the shit shed. So we got rid of that too. So the property looks a little bit nicer, like. Yeah, overall, on the grounds.
Get a little more room.
Yeah, well, it's beautiful. There's all this nature there, and then just having all these sheds and shit shed and whatever hanging around, you know?
So, I know, yeah, sheds. That's a problem with homeowners, you know? You get more sheds.
Yeah, and we kept extending parking too because we had so many people working there at the time. And now, like, it's like now we have like all these rock driveways, like we have no use for, like with all the gravel like around, like because we had to extend parking to accommodate 25 people working here at the time. Like when we stopped there, it was getting close to 25 people.
Yeah, it was. You guys had a lot of people in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, now we're getting closer to 40 here.
Wow.
And and I thought when we got here, I was like, oh, you know, same problem. Parking,
really?
Yeah, we have now. They're starting to park behind the building because, like, I thought we'd be good on parking for a while here, but we just keep adding, you know. So we're gonna have to,
I guess, 40 people, 40 cars, you know, you're gonna have
start carpooling or whatever. And there's some that actually live close by and they do like ride their bikes or whatever, which is probably nice for them, you know.
It's easier.
So, yeah, it's one of those things, though, you don't think about when you're like, oh, yeah, plenty of parking or whatever, you know.
Yeah, you would think there's, especially the size of the warehouse and the size of the lot, you wouldn't think about running out of parking.
Yeah, but, I park in the warehouse now, so.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's easier at the warehouse.
Yeah, with the big Sprinter van or whatever, it makes sense to just have the AudioScape van in the warehouse.
It's probably safer here anyway, you know.
Yeah, it's nice, you know, so. I'm trying to think what, there was something I wanted to talk to you about. I know you've done a lot of music for shows. What's some of your favorite things you've done as far as composing for film? I know you've done whole scores too, right?
Yeah.
As well.
Generally, you know, what I do is I do a lot of music. They bring me in because they want to get like kind of predator. I think more hipper or better production than their composers doing. So they'll have me do different little things here and there and do that. So, with shows, they usually tell me kind of like what they're looking for. They'll give me a sample or they'll say, you know, this is the scene. I don't do too much like just a scoring to film, but, you know, it's more like, you know, custom composing for, you know.
Yeah, for scene.
Yeah, for like scene and doing all that, yeah.
No, that's awesome. That's one of those worlds I don't think many people know too much about. And I know you actually, you've been around, you know, New York, the New York scene. You did the LA scene, obviously, and you're down here in Florida as well. Where's like your favorite place you think you've been as far as, you know, I'm sure they each have a special place in your heart with the time you were in.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, I grew up in New York City and then I spent years in LA. But I like Florida probably the best because it reminds me of Southern California, but it's not as crowded. It's not, you know, it doesn't have all the problems, the infrastructure and so forth that California does. You know, California's really pretty, but it's hindered by the overpopulation and then the infrastructure's not quite, doing it.
Yeah, anytime you get a lot of people in an area, the infrastructure's gonna suffer.
It is, and you know, you have like 5-6 lanes on either side, but you know, these freeways, but you know, it doesn't matter when you go out, it's like it's packed. You know, I'm like, where's everybody going at 1 a.m? It's crazy, but it just seems like everybody's there. You know, everybody's, you know, at least there's a, you know, with New York, it's like you definitely have a rush hour, but you definitely have an off hour as well. But in LA, in California in general, I think there's just like no off time anymore, you know, just because there used to be like, you know, kind of space between like LA and Orange County and then Orange County to San Diego. And now it just all runs right into each other. You know, it's just so many people, you know, 40 million people they've shoved in there. So it's,
yeah, we get a little bit of a taste of that when we go to NAMM every winter.
Yeah, you see that, right?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, Disney must be like, I haven't been to Disneyland in so long in California, but that must be packed.
We go there. I think we've been to that one now more than the Orlando one, just because we're always there every year. Every year. What do we do? And it's right next to Disney at the convention center in Anaheim.
It's right there, yeah.
So we've been there a lot more than the one here in Orlando, which is kind of funny, you know, because we're just 40 minutes up the road here.
Yeah,
all
right,
the time,
exactly.
You know, so the whole thing I think that people don't realize about Florida too is, you mentioned loving here, is that it's extremely diverse. I feel like, you know, there's usually, and I've said this a couple times before, but there's usually a mindset I feel like to look at, you know, Florida or people from Florida in a particular way or whatever the narrative is on the media with Florida. And there's, you know, it's just like everywhere. There's, you know, people that think this way, people that think this way. There's people that you know, have this kind of culture and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a stigma, I think. And I think people have the same stigma in like to California or to New York or to Chicago. And, you know, any of the places that are so big that they get a reputation from people that maybe not were fans or had a bad experience. Florida's very, very diverse. It's just as diverse as California.
Yeah.
You know, and that they always, you know, that was very diverse in itself. So it's, and I think it's become more as people have moved down here. I mean, you must have seen, having grown up here, the huge transformation that's happened now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's certain towns, like, I feel like where we're at here in Daytona is a little bit further behind in some ways, which I'm not angry about.
Yeah.
As far as being so corporatized with some of the stuff. I know we're like finally getting a Costco here, or we have one or whatever it is. I haven't been yet. Oh, well. But yeah, so it's one of those things where like, it's definitely though, as far as just the real estate in the area and just the state in general, it's been, ever since the pandemic's just been insane.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And that's, you know, that's why I like where I live, like Brevard County, because it's like, it's still kind of like, almost, it probably is similar to Volusia in some ways, in the sense it's like old Florida still. It's not like if you go down to southern Florida where it's like really packed and really, modernized. It's the same thing with the West Coast, I find, like Naples and
even central Florida a little bit.
And of course, Orlando as well.
Yeah, the sprawl from Orlando is just sort of doing
that. It keeps getting larger and larger. I'm thinking one day the sprawl is going to go right to the coast.
Yeah.
Probably either side.
Yeah.
You know, from Orlando.
I feel, definitely. And there's still some pockets like on the West Coast where you're driving through, you know, get to Lakeland and that. But yeah, there's still some pockets where it's like, okay, there's nothing really here.
Yeah.
It's nice, you know. And then you make it out to Tampa and you're like, oh, here we go.
Yeah, that's like overdevelopment then.
Yeah. You know? It's insane. But yeah, Florida is definitely a different beast than as advertised, let's just say that.
Yeah, definitely. Oh yeah, definitely now, you know.
It's definitely, I get, you know, from a, you know, topology of Florida, it is very flat. So, you know, for some people that might, you know, that might not do it for them if they like mountains, but you know, the beach is always there. You know.
That's the thing about the beach, yeah. And I think also Florida had this stigma where it was like, everybody was here was retired and old. And that's long gone now.
It really is.
That may have been the case 30 years ago or 40 years ago, but now it's got so much opportunity because there are so many cities.
And it is a very business friendly state as well.
Yeah, with the tax.
Yeah, with just anything, just running, just the ability to run a business, and even the town we're in, it was been very, they, you know, very open, very like, we moved into this larger facility. We had the fire marshal come out on a Sunday.
Really, man?
On a Sunday. Yeah, not many towns will do that for you. They were excited to get us in.
Wow.
They were excited to get some, you know, American labor in
That's
their
great.
Town,
yeah.
you know, and have more jobs in their town. And, you know, the same fire marshal came back because we moved in on a weekend, and the same fire marshal came back on Monday and was shocked. He's like, I've never seen anyone operational just moving in on a weekend and just being operational on Monday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like the first time he's ever seen that.
That's funny.
And that credit goes to Ryan for doing that. He put that whole move together. He got a lot of hands to help and do that. And, you know, I showed up like, I think on like the second day on the weekend, like on Sunday, and most of it was already done. I was just blown away.
Yeah, know? That is
grateful.
That's amazing. But when you think about it, if you're a business, that's the time to move in, right? On the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you can be all set for Monday. Or the
yeah.
week, you know,
it used to be gigs on the weekends. Now it's renovations on the weekends.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Whatever happened to those gigs?
Yeah. I miss them sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, but I love studio work. I love the devices we make. You know, I love that you're making these albums and that you're doing this. I feel like they're serving a good purpose. You know, they're a lot of them are benefit albums, right?
Yes.
Yeah. As well.
Yeah, and that goes to Hope for the Warriors.
And I know you did one with the Pulse nightclub shooting
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was with Larry Coryell and Mike Stern. And
yeah, I remember that was a few years back. Was that 19? Was that 2019 you did?
17.
17. Yeah. 19 was Band of Brothers?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. All these albums, you can check them out on Brian's page. You have your webpage. What's your webpage, Brian?
You could go to briantarquin.com or you could go to Bandcamp. They're there. You could go to bhpmusic.com and that'll take you to Bandcamp.
Okay.
And I'm on Spotify and all of that. All of
yeah.
the DSPs.
Do you prefer people check you out on Bandcamp versus Spotify? Do you have a preference or?
It doesn't matter. You know, if they want to purchase the album, it's probably better to go to Bandcamp.
Yeah.
Because they can download it. Spotify doesn't have that option. You know,
yeah, I'm not
streaming.
I'm not an avid Spotify listener, so
yeah.
that is definitely news to me. I could tell you about the circuitry of a compressor, but not the inner workings of Spotify or the end user things of Spotify. So.
But Apple Music, I think iTunes, you can still download. You
know? That's awesome.
Yeah.
No, so definitely check that out, Brian. I think we're gonna start ripping into some stuff here.
Cool.
Real quick.
That sounds good to me.
So thank you for joining us.
All right, brother. Great seeing you.
Yeah.